is the Seahawkers Podcast, episode 308. I'm Brandon Schultz of the Military Seahawkers, and joining me, my good buddy and Montana Seahawker, Adam Emmert.
Holy smokes, man. Good to be with you today. But I just wanted to jump into a major concern that I have about this organization, and it's its business plan slash business model that it has going here. Because every week they seem to kill off about 5% of the fan base with these sort of games. And so I just don't see where the revenue is going to come from here in about, you know, another 3-4 years when they've killed off every single 12 doing this year in, year out.
Yeah, you're talking about Pete Carroll and the Seattle Seahawks organization. It's unfortunate when, as a CEO, you have to start accounting for your members of the fan base that croak from heart attacks after these close games that come down to the very last play of the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, if there's one thing I do know is that I'm going to start investing in privately owned hospitals that specialize in heart treatments in the Seattle area.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do now. And then I'll be rich.
Adam's stock tip of the day.
Yeah. Yeah. And then who knows? Maybe I'll live more than 2-3 years here to enjoy all that money I make off of said investment. I don't know. We'll see. It's hard telling not knowing, because I'll tell you what, Brandon, on Sunday Night Football, real close to not being here.
Maybe life insurance policies. Those are the things to take out as a Seahawks fan. And then they can write in, you know, just as a kickback to us, like 10% just for the tip of making sure you've got your life insurance stuff covered.
Yeah, you got to, though, on the application, lie about the section where it asks about fandom. If you write in Seahawks, they will deny it.
They will deny it for sure. The Seahawks are 5-0 for the first time in franchise history, Adam, and they're the only 5-0 team in the NFL after week 5.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's really fun. It's nice to be 5-0. Interesting game. It's a very fun game. And it seems to be, and I don't know if you've noticed this, Brandon, that this game is whatever you make of it. It's in the eye of the beholder. I've seen so many people have such varying opinions on their just perception of this game. What this means for the Seahawks? Is it good or bad? Who played good or bad? It's just all over the map. So I'll be interested to hear your thoughts.
Well, we did learn that this Vikings team, it's a team that only takes about 7 minutes of good football to beat. Because that's about what I saw out of the Seahawks this past weekend.
Yeah. Well, look, first and foremost, you got to give the Vikings credit, especially in the first half, in playing a style that is the style that you play, to be a team that is built completely and entirely around a high flying offense. Time of possession, run the ball,
make it rain.
Make it rain. All right, fine. Like, I'm not going to sit here and blame rain things at all on this podcast. Russell Wilson has gigantic hands. There shouldn't be any problems there.
I'm thinking more in terms of slowing down an offense, because especially an offense that likes to throw the football, because usually in these rain games, we see.
Yeah, we're not talking about the rain.
We see what we saw from the Vikings, though.
What'd you see from the Vikings?
A team that just pounds it on the ground and,
you think that was because of the rain? That's not the MO of their style that they've played all year. What Mike Zimmer said he wanted to do in the offseason and all that.
Yes.
Yeah. It just drives me crazy when I hear people talk about, oh, well, it was raining. That's what stopped them here.
No, I'm saying that in circumstances like this, where there is rain, a team, I don't know, like the Chiefs or, a team, even with Belichick and the Patriots with Tom Brady, they might shift from being more pass heavy to a run heavy offense. But that is what the Vikings are anyway. So I see what you're saying there.
Exactly. They really, if you're going to break down factors in the game by percentage, right? Like, what percentage of a factor did the rain play? I'm going to tell you less than 10%. And so I just find it to be an almost inconsequential part of the game. I don't think it really affected the style at all. The Vikings would have played exactly the same way to try to beat the Seahawks on Sunday Night Football.
Yeah.
Look, they kept the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand. They got quick defensive stops, and the Seahawks had, what, 2 possessions in the first half?
3. Yeah.
Okay. And that
three
was
whole
by
first
design.
Half possessions. If you don't count, you know, the final one where they had just about zero time left on the clock. So if you want to count that one, then four. But yeah, three legitimate possessions.
Right. And it was really the recipe that you go with. I mean, the time of possession thing in the first half was a huge factor. And this is going to be the way that teams beat the Seahawks going down the stretch this year. I mean, this is the thing that we've talked about on the podcast, and they played it to a T. And it was absolutely infuriating to watch in the first half because you wanted to see this team get a rhythm. But that's the problem when you're playing high-flying offense football. If you don't get a rhythm quickly in the game, it can get real ugly really fast.
And it was ugly even throughout the second half for a good portion of it. Pro Football Talk put out an article this week that the Seahawks were the first team in 2 years to win the game without converting on third down. The Seahawks 0-for-7 on third down in this game.
Yeah. And then you factor that with the Vikings, who were like 432 for 433 on third down throughout the game.
The funny thing was, is that listening to Pete, he was actually happy with how the defense stopped the Vikings on third down in this game because it was an improvement over previous games.
Well, somehow at the end of the day, the final numbers are 6 for 14.
That doesn't seem right. Vikings. Yeah. Then they made
that does two, not feel right at
they
all.
They made two fourth down. So that right. makes it. But even still, I felt like all six of those third downs were probably third and tens.
Yeah. And the thing is that the defense, you know, if we're going to talk about first half here a little bit more, they kind of did everything that you kind of hope the defense can do right now. And that was, they made the Vikings work to go down the field. It never felt like they were just never getting a third down, that it was all easy, a lot of explosives, any of that sort of thing. It was methodical. They'd always get that half a yard more than they needed for the next first down, right? But it wasn't quick strikes, that sort of thing, which, again, a little by design. But also, too, the defense kind of held them that way. To hold them to only 13 points with the way that first half went, in some ways, was a victory.
You know, it's interesting that the Seahawks defense, there's only two teams that have held the Vikings under 30 points this season. One was the Indianapolis Colts, and now the other one, the Seattle Seahawks.
It was an interesting effort by the defense. The thing is that
interesting.
By watching
that's an interesting description to use.
Well, here's the thing is my takeaway from it is they're one of the better of the bad defenses because yes. They're not just good. It's just not scorched earth, right? Teams just running roughshod over.
Right.
They're not the Falcons, but they ain't really stopping anybody either, but at least they make you work for it a little bit so that, you know, hopefully in a 16 play drive, a 13 play drive, you have one play that derails the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple defensive stops in this game that made a huge difference. And let's start with KJ Wright, because his play in the third quarter, it was after watching him drop three interceptions, potentially interceptions in the last game. This one, he just snags out of the air.
Cousins is going to roll right. He's going to look. The ball is intercepted. KJ Wright reaches up about 13 feet in the air and pulls it down. What a play by number 50. He had three of them a shot at last week and didn't bring one in that time. A fabulous one-handed interception by the Spider, KJ Wright. What a big play in the Seahawks again in scoring territory against the Vikings.
Practically goes OBJ there.
I know. And you know, at first, I thought Rabel was exaggerating, saying 13 feet in the air. But I suppose when you count his vertical, his height, and his arm length, 13 feet is probably accurate.
Because he's what, 6'4"?
Right.
Yeah. And so your arm is generally about, I don't know,
half that.
A little under half, right? Of that. Yeah. So another three. So that puts you, what, like 9.5-ish almost, like somewhere in there?
Yeah. 4 foot. Jump in the air.
Yeah, I don't think he jumped 4 feet there, but no. You know, maybe he might have been around 10, which is, you know, still pretty. Well, he could probably dunk, right? So yeah, I bet you he can get up about 11 feet.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, but he did. He got every inch of his vertical was on display there, plus his hands. Again, this is an awesome example of this team, these players, this game is whatever it is that you want to make of it. Because I remember here in the first couple games, everybody talking about how slow KJ is. He's just not the player he used to be. He's almost a liability in pass coverage. He dropped those three interceptions. And then after this game, oh, that was an excellent game by KJ. How many of you believe that KJ has been outplaying Bobby all year? And I mean, just the narrative completely flipped by some people. When I look at it, KJ has been playing like KJ all year.
Yeah, he's not the fastest guy, but he finds his way to be in position to make big plays, whether it's diagnosing a screen and blowing a guy up. He was there on the fumble recovery when DeMontre Moore hit Kirk Cousins' arm, fumbling it forward the first time, not the one at the end of the game to close it out, but the one that KJ recovered and probably would have gone straight into the end zone had it not been blown dead by the officials. And so, yeah, he's out there making plays.
He is, and I found it interesting to see some people make the comparison, like, well, who's a better player right now, Bobby or KJ? And some people having a negative opinion on Bobby at this point, which really? I don't get at all. Like, the one thing I do understand is that you're seeing him jump gaps. I mean, he's not playing super gap sound.
Was that one big run play that I think of Cook, where he took the inside gap and you know, Dalvin Cook took the outside, right?
Right. And he's been doing that quite a bit.
Yeah.
Thing about it is more often than not, he's right. But
yeah, I'm not going to be mad at Bobby for, you know, guessing wrong once or twice.
When this defensive line is as porous as it is in many ways, he's got to do that. He's got to take more risks. And so that's what he's doing. And so some people see that as a decline in play, possibly. I just understand that is what it is for him right now. That's what he needs to do to try to carry it. But one of the defensive linemen that really had an outstanding game, especially early, Mr. Reed.
Jaron Reed's first half, Adam. He was shutting things down up the middle, and I felt like I didn't see as much of him in the second half, though.
Yeah, maybe not quite as disruptive. I'm sure the Vikings adjusted their blocking schemes a little bit to try to keep him off that total liability of a right guard, whatever his name was, Captain Incompetent over there.
Samia?
Yeah. Jaron Reed put on a clinic, you know, early and often against that poor bastard. That was a tough go for him.
There's quite a few Vikings fans upset with that guy after today. And I think he's referenced in my Better at Life even. So a little bit of a teaser there. But while we're on defense, you talk about Reed, you talk about KJ. Let's talk about Bobby for a minute, because it was the play of the game, really, that saved this game for the Seahawks, where Bobby Wagner was in on the tackle.
He gets the ball. He gets hit. I don't think he got there. It's going to be close. It's going to be oh so close. It's Seahawks football. He did not make it. Madison got the handoff, tried to go over his right guard, and did not get there. The Seahawks, Bobby Wagner was there along with others. They stopped the play.
Okay, Brandon, I have a very serious question for you.
Uh-huh.
Because, holy smokes, opinions all over the place regarding this fourth down attempt. Now, before the play, be honest, when they lined up to go for it, were you like, sweet? Or were you like, oh no, this is terrible. I really wish they'd kicked the field goal here.
You know, I wasn't really thinking of it in terms of a Seahawks fan at the moment. I was actually thinking in terms of what made the most sense for the Vikings. To me, it made sense for them to go for it in this situation, because they had inches to just be able to close out and win this game. So when you have that, when you've been running over the Seahawks defense the entire day, you go for it.
Really? That's interesting. See,
I was also thinking this is their opportunity to make this happen and win the game too, because I do think that if the Vikings kick the field goal in that situation, the Seahawks end up winning the game anyway.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's an interesting take.
Interesting take? They go up by 8. Russell Wilson drives down, gets the touchdown, gets the 2-point conversion. They go into overtime, and Russell Wilson wins it. Why is that a weird take?
That's a weird take just for exactly what you said. So I'll explain it to you very simply. Look, the Vikings go for it there, and as they're lining up, I'm like, oh, thank God. Like, not that it was at all surefire that they were going to stop him, but we had a chance.
Uh-huh.
Because in that instance, if we happen to stop him, that 30% chance, whatever it is, that we stop him, that we actually then have a chance to win the game in regulation.
Rather than tie it and go into overtime, yeah.
If the Vikings simply kick the freaking field goal, they have a 0% chance of losing in regulation. A 0% chance.
Yeah. And then they're putting it up to essentially a coin flip in overtime.
No, they're not just putting it up to a coin flip in overtime. Russell Wilson has to get the ball, drive him all the way down the field, score a touchdown, and a two-point conversion.
Yeah.
I think many people underestimate how freaking difficult that is.
And when you look at the analytics, Adam, I haven't looked at them, but I'm just assuming with Russell Wilson, MVP quarterback, when you look at the analytics and that percentage chance of that happening, it's 100%. So, I mean, why?
Yeah, I mean, the math don't lie, I guess, especially Brandon's math, which, you know, always backs
that
him
up. That was the math that appeared in my head as I was doing all the calculations, is that Russell Wilson wins this game.
Right. I mean, it was hard enough for us to go down and score, let alone get the 2-point, right?
Sure.
The odds of that are so freaking low. So you have a great chance to win the game in that situation, a 0% chance to lose the game, and you run it on fourth down. I don't get it. Now, I do understand that stat nerd guy, like they want you to go for it on every single fourth down. And the thing is that a lot of the people that I see upset that Pete was punting on occasion in this game are coming back and killing Zimmer for going for it on fourth down. It's like, wait, be consistent.
Yeah. Like, if you're going to go with the probabilities, then you have to do that all the time, I suppose.
Yeah, either it's always go for it, or it's, hey, it makes more sense via situational football to punt or kick a field goal in certain circumstances.
Yeah.
And, you know, I saw a lot of people upset about how Pete was electing to play the game a little bit. And I think it was the last punt of the game that they had that a lot of people are upset. But to me, it made all the sense in the world. Did it work out exactly? No, but at least I'll be consistent. I thought they should have punted it when they did, and I thought Mike Zimmer should have kicked the field goal there.
Okay, yeah, the last punt was when they were on the Minnesota 40. That was in the third quarter. It was a 4th and 7.
Yeah.
And they were, what? They were down by 2 points at that time, maybe?
Yeah, yeah.
Or wait, no, they were up by 2 points.
Yeah, and they had actually, the defense had come out in the second half and had really been playing lights out, right? I mean, they came out of the locker room and it felt like there was an avalanche of momentum.
They had the three and out. They had the Vikings to a 3-and-out right away. Then 2 straight turnovers. And yeah, that's they owned the third quarter.
Right. So at that point, when you're saying, well, should we punt it or go for it? Why would you give the Vikings a chance at life offensively by going for it on 4th and 7 and having a 50-50 shot of getting it?
Yeah, and Dixon was on fire in this game and punted it down to the 3-yard line.
Exactly, and he had a lot of those. So I thought that was the right call there. I know a lot of folks didn't. I guess it's a matter of style, but I thought they made the right play there.
The defense didn't come up with any plays on the next drive. They just, you know, straight down the field. And
it didn't work out. I'm saying it didn't work out, but that's what I would have done in the moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It just was unfortunate that the result then was an 8-minute drive by the Vikings that resulted in an Adam Thielen touchdown.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of things that could have lost this game, and I don't really point to the punting as any particular critical moments that would have lost the Seahawks this game. I think about Russell Wilson throwing that interception late where Chris Carson gets pushed out of bounds and Russell throws the ball inbounds. I don't know what, if he was looking for a pass interference, even though he was outside the pocket. I don't know why Russell Wilson was throwing to not out of bounds in that situation.
Well, you notice he got crushed after he threw the ball, right?
Yeah. But running to his right and
got destroyed just as he let the ball go.
Okay, so you think he slipped? It just slipped out of his hand, or he was trying to throw it out of bounds?
Yeah, I think it forced a throw that was less than accurate. It's not where he wanted to go with the ball. I bet you he was trying to go out of bounds.
Yeah.
But, you know, it turns out you get a big-ass football player bearing down on you while you're trying to huck the rock. Makes it a little tougher. But that was one of those where you're just like, wow, that's uncharacteristic.
It was.
Now, let me ask you, Brandon, at that moment in time, Russ throws the pick. Are you looking at the NFC West standings, starting to wonder about the one seed, you know, looking on the in the win-loss column and starting to look on the right-hand column and start writing numbers down? Were you in that mindset right there?
Well, I not quite then. It may have been one play later when Madison ripped off that 25-yard run because they were at midfield. And I'm thinking, okay, well, there's a chance that the Vikings, that they can get a quick stop here. And I think Seattle had two of their three timeouts at this point, too. So I was definitely counting timeouts, looking at the clock with, you know, almost 6 minutes left in the game. Weren't you? I mean, with about four and a half minutes left on the clock?
I hadn't gotten to the, hey, this game's over. I mean, in my head, I'm sitting here thinking, well, heck, if they can just hold them to a field goal, you know, in Russ, I trust.
Like, yeah, then they can tie it up, right?
Yeah, all they have to do is hold them to a field goal. Like, that's what I'm thinking. Now, Madison has a couple big runs, sure, but they still hadn't given up a touchdown yet. You know, like, what if they had scored there, then sure. Then at that point, I'm like, oh, okay, mathematically speaking, this isn't going to work out. But I just saw a lot of folks in despair and despondent, you know, at that point in the game. And it's like, just pump the brakes a little bit here. Let's see what happens on this defensive stand. And, you know, sure as shit,
catfish!
They stopped him on a fourth down. And Russell Wilson now has the ball in his hands to win the game.
And a big play in that sequence was the holding call on O'Neal for the Vikings. Because you look at the runs on that final drive by the Vikings, it was the 25 yarder. Madison had a 6 yard run, then another 4 yard run for a first down, picked up four on first and 10. Then he had a 5 yard run where they had the holding penalty. So that backed him up to second and 16, but then they get another 12 yard run and they're, you know, third and four. Thielen almost gets the first down, even though, gosh, Neal had a beat on him, probably should have had him. You had the other safety right there, Diggs, who probably should have brought him down for a loss. And it takes Benson Mayoa and DeMontre Moore, like, stopping him inches short of the first down.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they were holding on by the hair of their chinny chin chin. There's no doubt. We could use some more help on defense. And I'm definitely looking forward to Adams coming back and maybe Snacks, you know, kind of being worked into the mix and kind of help. Because
Jordan Brooks, maybe for Cody Barton. Although Barton did have a key block on fourth down.
Talk about another dude in the eye of the beholder. I heard some people talk about what a great game. Like Clinton Bonner, 3-3 out, man. Barton had a fantastic game. I see him, you know, make those comments. Other people being like, he couldn't tackle a kindergartner. You know, like, it just, again, it's...
I think 10 of his 14 tackles, he was dragging down the dude from behind, like, after he had already passed him.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know, but some people, they see him as a viable player and doing very well, and other people...
he's fine.
He's a dumpster fire. He's okay. He's okay. I mean, I'm ready for the Cody Barton experiment to be done.
Yeah.
I mean, he's more of a liability than an asset.
Yeah, I want to see Jordan Brooks out there. So yes. Healthy Jordan Brooks, let's get him out there and see what that looks like.
Oh, you mean not Patrick Queen?
Patrick Queen has one huge game where was he defensive player of the week this past week? He did have a huge game.
Did he? You know how many minutes of Patrick Queen I've watched?
Zero.
Zero. So I really don't have an opinion on it. But
yeah.
I know a lot of people are bumming.
Yeah, well, they watched the Ravens game and he had just a hugely dominant game, which is probably... I mean, I hadn't watched him either, but, you know, just scrolling through the PFF scores just to see what he had there. He was ranked like last for the Ravens defense. So I'm willing to wait till the end of the season until we can actually see what Jordan Brooks can do on the field as a healthy linebacker before I completely write him off as another bust as a Seahawks first round pick.
Yeah. So I have this crazy theory and I don't know. It's insane, but just bear with me for a second. I let a guy play out for about 3 years before I make a definitive decision on whether or not he's total garbage or not.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. I don't know. It's crazy. It's a crazy thought. Like this idea of giving a player time to develop and how he fits in the scheme.
No, Jordan Brooks got hurt. He's barely played in one game. He's a dumpster fire of a player. Fire John Schneider.
Fire John Schneider. Yeah. No, it's just, it's the knee-jerk reactions. It's just this crazy, crazy town.
You want to talk about some offense?
Yeah, I kind of wanted to get defense stuff out of the way so we could talk about third quarter offense and last drive offense. And then the rest of it, we don't need to really discuss.
Third quarter offense and last drive offense. So let's start with Russell Wilson finding Will Disley down the sideline for a touchdown.
Single setback, Russell out of the shotgun. Homer the setback, the throw to the back corner of the end zone. Reaching up, making the catch, touchdown, Seahawks! Will Disley running away from the man on coverage and a perfect pass thrown by Russell Wilson on the left side of the end zone. The Seahawks right back in this one, 13-6, the Vikings leading the Hawks.
Running away from the man on coverage is an interesting descriptor. The linebacker fell down and Disley caught it in the back of the end zone. But the thing that I liked about that was that when Russell let go of that ball, Disley was covered up and he made a play and got the touchdown.
Yeah, Uncle Will to the rescue there. But more importantly, that play was possible because at that point in the game, that's when the Vikings had started to change up their defensive looks a little bit, and they were playing single high safety in that situation. Now, we go back to the first half, and they were playing all, you know, two high safety.
Yeah.
Yep. And, you know, whether that was a form of quarters or Tampa or whatever it was that they were doing there, our little zone man matching and that sort of thing. What they were doing was is they were covering the deep part of the field and basically playing towards the tendencies that the Seahawks offense is showing you all season. And that is Russell Wilson taking the snap and going for a fucking kill shot on every play.
Right.
And so when you only have like 10 plays in the first half and every one of them, you're just bombs away against, a defense that is totally backed off. You're going to have some, consistency issues. And that's what the problem was. So, I'd said at the end of the first half, I was like, look, what they need to do is they need to pound the rock a little bit and they need to go to the quick hitting short passing game, be able to suck one of those safeties down. That opens up the field then to some of those kill shots. And lo and freaking behold, guess what they started doing? Exactly that. And if you go back and look, somebody had done a great breakdown, and I wish I could remember the article. I think it was a field goals article detailing when they ran and when they passed. And like, so basically they would run, make the safety come down on the next play, gonk over the top.
Yeah.
And they did it over and over again there for the majority of the third quarter.
Well, it definitely worked out because, well, for one, in the third quarter, they didn't have to drive very far because it was David Moore getting a nice punt return to put the Seahawks near midfield that led up to that Will Disley touchdown. It was KJ Wright recovering the fumble that was on the Minnesota 15-yard line. They get a short little pass to Freddie Swain, and then DK Metcalf in the end zone, a dart to him.
Second down and 8 at the 13. Russ takes the shotgun snap, looks, fires a shot inside, reaching out, making a catch. Touchdown, Seahawks! DK Metcalf dives into the end zone, making the catch, and then takes the ball and slings it about 50 rows up into the south end zone. Big score after the big turnover. The Seahawks a point away from taking the lead after trailing the entire first half.
Your DK Metcalf jersey is going to be their win, Brandon?
I want a DeKalen Zacharias Metcalf jersey. Two touchdowns on the day. A huge day. He's, what is he now? Number 3 overall in the NFL for receiving yards. Yeah, I think I'm looking forward to my DK Metcalf jersey, Adam.
I think you ought to be. I mean, I think the whole national media love fest with DK Metcalf has now blossomed into full bloom after this game. And, rightfully so, DK was making huge plays. And an enormous game from him when we needed it the most, because they really concentrated on Tyler. And they were like, look, we're just not going to let that guy beat us. And pick your poison. Good luck opposing defenses. You're not going to hold it down forever. Just as much as I was kind of complaining about high flying offense and how the time of possession can get wonky like it did the first half. Mm-hmm. Well, the other edge of that sword is that all of a sudden you can score 21 points in 13 seconds, and which is basically what they did there in the third quarter, DK being a big part of it.
We saw him there. We saw him on the 4th-and-10 play on the final drive when the Seahawks needed it big time. Let's hold off on going to the final drive, though, because it was right after the KJ Wright pick where he jumped up in the air 85 feet, came down with a football, and then Russell just turns and hands off to Chris Carson on the very next play.
The handoff to Carson starts right, back up the middle, pounds through one, through two, he's going to score! Touchdown, Seahawks! Chris Carson just runs over half of the Minnesota defense. The Seahawks have scored three touchdowns in the blink of an eye to start this second half, and Carson says, give me the ball, I'm going to run them all over.
This was the high point of the game up until the end, you know, in the winning touchdown, but... Man, it felt awesome to be a Seahawks fan after being down 13-0 and then all of a sudden being up 21-13.
Yeah, I know. It was great. And Chris Carson, man, just such an underrated cog to this offense. People just don't give him the credit. I love the man. And he brings that edge. And he does. It's the closest thing to Beast Mode we've had since Beast Mode. And it's awesome. I mean, he did just plow truck some dudes. It was fun to watch. We had work out there helping add a little balance to the offense. And really, it was his work early in the third quarter there that helped kind of unlock the passing game. Like I said earlier, getting one of those safeties to move down in the box.
Don't you kind of wish we would have seen more from Chris Carson in this game, though? Just 8 carries for 52 yards on the day, and one was that 29-yard touchdown. He did have 6 catches out of the backfield, so he was involved in the passing game too, but I thought on a day like this where in the first half we didn't see the passing game working that well, that they could have been handing the ball off to Chris Carson because he was having success almost every time he touched the ball.
Well, I mean, they tried starting the game that way, did they not? I mean, Carson punt.
That was start of the second half.
No, that was the first drive of the game. Run, punt.
No, that was the start of the second half. No,
look it up. I am.
I'm looking at it right now. The first play of the game was a pass over the short middle to Chris Carson, and then Chris Carson off the right guard for 5 yards, and then the pass to DK Metcalf. That first drive of theirs in the first quarter was a relatively successful drive because they crossed over midfield and that was the first punt. Remember, because it was the penalty by Damian Lewis on that very first drive that really started the chain reaction of the false start backed him up to 2nd-and-13. Then Russell Wilson dropped back to pass. He got sacked for -9.
Yeah.
And so rather than running it on that 2nd-and-13, which they haven't been running in 2nd-and-long a lot, but they were still in position for a field goal at that point until the sack. And then they have the give up play to Travis Homer that infuriated everybody on 3rd-and-22 because then they're punting.
And so poor Travis Homer takes a lot of the rap for those sort of things too. And I want to come back to Travis Homer when we get to the last drive of the game.
Okay.
But you were 100% right. I was 100% wrong. It was the run was the start of the second half. You're 100% correct. But what I do know,
and the thing was with that 1, 3rd-and-1 run by Chris Carson, that was the only time he was not successful running between the tackles.
Yep. No, true fact.
Only time in the game.
I guess if both of us were saying, geez, I wish we could have seen a little more Chris Carson, you know, especially down the stretch here in the second half, you can blame Pete Carroll because apparently he went to Shoddy after that drive and said, I want Russ involved in everything. It is the quote. So now that could have been, you know, some read option and stuff like that, keeping Carson involved. But
no, you give Skybox Shoddy the green light to keep Russell Wilson involved in every play. He's airing it out and going for kill shots.
And that's where they went. It was an interesting tale of two halves. And yeah, mixed emotions coming out of this game. But fortunately, the last emotion that we all got to feel was elation after Russ just came out and showed why he's the most clutch quarterback in the entire NFL.
The drive starts for the Seahawks on the 6-yard line after that turnover on downs. And, you know, the weird thing was, Adam, is you talk about how much they threw it around in the second half. Before the final two drives, Russell Wilson had only thrown one incomplete pass. Mm. And he finished the game 20 of 32. So he missed 11 passes, or, you know, threw it away or whatever it was on those final two drives. I think there were 8 incompletions altogether on the final drive, which makes it incredible to me that they were able. It just shows you, like you're saying, his will to drive the ball downfield, not just take the short dump offs, because, well, the first play on first and 10 at the 6-yard line, he runs it up the middle for 17 yards.
And how key is that when you start the drive and you're backed up and you just need to get something positive going,
yeah,
to start the momentum to kind of chug, for him to come out and look, I think Lewis got smoked on that play. And there was not a free rusher, but more or less a free rusher. It was pretty damn close to one. And Russ makes a huge play there to get us out of the end zone. And because he starts 3 yards in the end zone, that run.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, bust it up for 17. And that really kickstarts the drive.
It kickstarted it, but then it immediately sputtered out because 2 incompletions thrown David Moore's direction. He goes incomplete on 3rd down. I think he was throwing it away there. And then we get the 4th and 10 throw, 39 yards to DK Metcalf to keep the drive alive.
It was a sensational throw and catch. And don't get me wrong, Russell Wilson and DK Metcalf are heroes. I love them to death. Like that 4th down, like I thought they'd get it. I really did. I wasn't in despair mode in any stretch of the imagination at that point. I genuinely thought they were going to pick that up. But the true and total hero of that play is Travis Homer.
The Vikings defense send six guys on that blitz.
Yeah.
Everybody on the offensive line picks up their guy. And Homer, who's to Russell's left, I believe.
I think he was to the right.
Was he to the right? But the blitzer was coming from the right.
Yeah.
I thought he had to cross in front of Russ, but I could be wrong.
Oh, well, he may have. You're right. At the start of the play, I'm picturing Homer picking up the block in my head.
On the right side, yeah.
Where he started at the play, I couldn't tell you if it was on Russ's left or right side.
It's
Sorry.
Not that important. Yeah. He made the play.
Yeah, he made the play. And I mean, look, he got kind of blowed up a little bit doing it, but he bought Russ that kind of time. And you saw Russ trust him in that. And I give JT O'Sullivan, the former quarterback, he has a YouTube channel called the QB School, and he does a killer breakdown of this final drive. And it wasn't until I watched that he pointed out Travis Homer in that situation and what a great job he did blocking there. And then furthermore, throughout the rest of the drive, he shows where Homer actually makes a couple nice blocks too. And since he played for Zimmer at one point in his career, he knows how Zimmer likes to heat people up. And one of the things he likes to do is get two guys on the back in pass protection. And he makes it really difficult on the back because he's the weakest link, right? Out of all your blockers.
Oh, for sure.
And Homer made good decision after good decision throughout the course of that drive, whether that was chipping and leaking out, you know, standing his ground, picking up the correct blitzer. We beg on Travis Homer as a fan base.
Let's be fair. His pass blocking was not that great going into this game.
I disagree. I've heard you say that a couple times, and I've definitely watched games and been like, oh, he's doing a decent job of pass
blocking. This was the best game that I've seen in pass blocking.
Yeah, I've heard you say that. I didn't know where you'd gotten the idea that he wasn't good in pass protection, because I'd say like 2 pods ago, you had said something like that.
Yeah.
And I meant to call you out a little bit on it, because I don't believe that to be true.
Well, we can go back and rewatch the older games, but
yeah.
It was night and day to me in this game versus previous games.
Well, they wouldn't have him in there in those situations if he wasn't the best pass protection guy on the
team. Well, he might be the best pass protection guy, which is, I mean, maybe he just had some bad moments where he got blown up in previous games. But yeah, I will give him credit for this game. Absolutely.
Yeah, I guess I just don't remember watching a game being like, oh, Travis Homer can't block today. Now, okay. I definitely remember games thinking, oh, Travis Homer can't get to the edge.
What, like this game?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, I mean, we bag on him in certain situations, right? Like, yeah, I'm done with the Travis Homer wide zone play or you know, crack toss or whatever. I'm done with that. But he does have value as a pass protector. And that would have been enough.
You can't totally be done with that. I mean, you need to at least keep the defense honest and,
run him through
and
the tackles,
try some of that stuff.
Run him between the tackles. Like, I just, that's a, he might pick up a yard or two if you run him between the tackles. You run him outside, and that's a 2 yard loss. But yeah, DK picks up that fourth down courtesy of Travis Homer and his miraculous, amazing, unblinking, perfect blocking every time of Travis Homer. I loved it. I love that. And then they continued on down the field from there.
Continued on down the field, hitting Tyler Lockett on the throwback scribble play where Russell did a loop-de-loop in the pocket.
Mini scribble. It was a mini scribble.
Mini scribble. Yeah.
Yeah. That, and look, we hadn't seen him pull one of those out yet for a minute and maybe all season. And holy cow, was that timely.
They needed that. And DK Metcalf, another pass to him, gets the Seahawks down to the 6 yard line where they get four shots at the end zone. Three of those go into DK Metcalf. You thought he may have had the first one.
That should have been a touchdown.
Now, do you think it should have been a touchdown because DK should have held on to it or because he caught the ball in the end zone before fumbling it?
Take your pick. I don't think they're mutually exclusive.
Because I thought he had the ball long enough to say it was a catch in the end zone, and then the guy punched it out.
I've seen Golden Tate possess the ball as a Detroit Lion for 1/1,000,000th of a second in the end zone, and it count as a touchdown.
Right.
I've seen that happen.
Yeah, and to me, that was a catch in the end zone.
Yeah.
Because once it's possessed in the end zone, if somebody punches it out, that's... You can't fumble it at that point. It's already crossed the plane.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And official. Then also, too, hold on to the damn ball.
Like, and then hold on to the ball.
Yeah.
My least favorite play of the entire series was that 3rd and 6 play where Russell was throwing the fade to the back of the end zone. And, I mean, by the time he let go of it, it was just hoping that DK would be able to make a play to get back there because, one, he wasn't open. He had Tyler. If he would have just looked to his left, slanting in, wide open.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I was pissed about that play.
Yeah. That one, the second it left his hand, I was like, no, not a fade. Not a fade. No. But you knew it had to come down to fourth down with 15 seconds on the clock or 20 seconds on the clock. And I mean, look, Russ can't do it if it's not dramatic. He's just he's a drama queen.
Russell, look out. He's going to fire inside, reaching up, making a catch. Does he hang on? He does. It's a touchdown. It's a touchdown, Seahawks, and it's Metcalf who reaches up and makes the catch, crossing the field, making the catch in the middle of the end zone. And Russell finds him and throws a dart. And we all waited to see who it was, Dave, that made the catch, because it could have been anybody. But it was Metcalf going to the ground. Perfect pass by Russ, and absolutely no doubt about it.
Did we get some Wyman chuckles on the call?
We got a little Wyman chuckle after the excitement from Steve Vrabel.
Yeah, yeah. It was an absolutely exciting play. I was at this point at the top of the mountain, and it was cold. It was like really cold, and I was ready for that game to be over. And yeah. Boy, it felt good to drive down the mountain with that feeling of exaltation. Yep, there was definitely a loud yell from the truck at that point.
Russell finishes the day 20 of 32, 3 touchdowns, 1 interception, still a quarterback rating over 100, 58 rushing yards leading the team on the ground with a couple big important runs in this game. So while he doesn't have the big 300-yard passing day, he does add another stat to his win column, Adam.
Does what is he at now? Is it something like 34, 44? Something four, is it?
Pete said 34 in the post-game press conference. When it's fourth quarter comebacks, going off of the Pro Football Reference stats, it's 24. So Pete may have misheard when it came to fourth quarter comebacks.
Because some people, I think, you have to be trailing by more than a certain amount of points. And then some people, I think, count it whether you were tied or trailing.
Tied or trailing counts as a game-winning drive.
Okay.
And Russell has 30 game-winning drives.
Okay.
So for this game, he gets a stat in both the fourth quarter comeback column and the game-winning drive column. When we talked, I think it was after the Dallas game, I had mentioned Jim Kelly's name and Joe Montana's name. And that was the game-winning drives. Mm. And so he's still, I think, two behind Joe for fourth quarter comebacks. But he'll be able to run him down this year.
He'll run it down. Okay, so do you get credit for barely beating the bye week? Like, if he makes a fourth quarter comeback against the bye this week, do we count that one?
I don't think so. I don't think that goes in stack.
Well, then, all right. So he won't run down Joe for another 3 weeks then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We'll have to wait a little bit longer.
Yeah.
Is that what Pete's going for? Is that why he's doing this to us? He wants Russell to rack up stats?
Dude, I don't know. I don't know how this team has a complete and total inability to win a game by more than a score and not in the final moments of the game. You watch Pete lose his catfish in the locker room when he's doing the whole when can you win the game thing. If you're, say, like KJ Wright, which I didn't see him in the shot at all, but I'm sure he's tired of hearing that whole spiel. But the players, they seem to humor him and, get fired up with him on that one. But, man, he had some energy after that win.
Pete was fired up after that win. And, in the locker room. And Seahawks 5-0 going into the bye week. Coming out of the bye week, 3 of 4 games on the road, including 2 games against division opponents with the Arizona Cardinals up next in week 7.
Mm-hmm.
Going on the road to that. One of our...
So 6-0 after week 7?
They generally do get wins there unless they tie, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they get to play San Francisco at home in Seattle.
So they'll be 7-0 after after 8 weeks?
And then on the road to Buffalo.
Oh, so they might be 7-0-1 after that game.
They're going to tie that Buffalo game?
Yeah, I just don't feel a loss.
And then L.A. Rams after that week in Buffalo.
The most fake 4-1 start to the entire league.
There's nothing fake about that start. They beat 4 bad NFC East teams.
Yeah, yeah. Totally legit.
Yeah. That's going to be... I don't know. Let's see what the Rams have for tests for them coming up, because they may not have any big tests themselves. Actually, okay, they play San Francisco next Sunday night, which it'll be fun because one of those teams will lose. So we can just celebrate
that. Revel in that. Hey, if you're not rooting for the tie, you're not a real 12.
And then the week after that, they play the Chicago Bears, who are they a legit 4-1?
I don't know. That defense
is all
right.
They beat the Bucks. The only team they've lost to is the Colts.
I'm not sure if the Bucks are good. There's times where I look at the Bucks and I'm like, wow, like real pieces on defense. Tom Brady seems to be getting it and it all seems to be syncing up. And then they throw out that clunker against the Bears. I don't know what to make of it.
And then the real test for the Rams is when they go to Miami and play the Dolphins.
Hey, man, it was all the Niners had to even stay within, 3,000 points of the Dolphins at last game.
It was a fun game to watch.
Oh, my God, that was a beautiful game to watch.
Garoppolo not being able to stay in the game.
Garoppolo not being able to throw it into the catfishing ocean.
Yeah. And then we saw Beathard. They were just over Mullins after last game.
I guess. I mean, that is an embarrassment. You have to be more than concerned if you're a 49ers fan right now.
Because this was supposed to be the game for the 49ers where they could say, oh, well, Jimmy G is coming back and Debo is coming back and George Kittle's, back to health. And so
and
they had
Ayuk is getting it figured out. And
Raheem Mostert coming back.
Yeah.
So they had all of the pieces on offense going up against a Miami defense.
Yep.
And only able to score 17 points.
And total hot garbage. Yeah. And the beard just destroyed him. I love it when the beard gets hot and it's not against the Seahawks.
Yes.
Like, I'll root for the beard every time.
350 yards, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions against the Niners.
Holy crap. Are the Niners corners terrible right now?
Now, that's the excuse. That's the excuse that you hear from 49ers fans is, oh, well, Brian Allen, he was just on the practice squad, coming into this game, and yeah, he got dominated. But, that's a practice squad guy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I saw Tart get lit up. That whole secondary.
I saw Jamar Taylor, former Seahawks corner, getting tore up
a little bit. Yeah, I love that falls under not our problem anymore. That feels good.
Yeah, I love how the 49ers, we have this thing between the 49ers and Seahawks where we get their players sometimes, they get our players sometimes, and they watched the Seahawks and Jamar Taylor and go, oh yeah, we could use that guy.
Right.
Like, they actually thought that.
Yeah, I don't know, man. There's some baffling personnel moves out there for sure.
It's looking good for the Seahawks on the schedule moving forward, though. This was the toughest stretch of quarterbacks that they're going to face this year. I mean, the other quarterbacks the toughest quarterbacks that they're facing throughout the rest of the year might be within their own division.
For sure. With Kyler Murray.
Kyler Murray and Jared Goff?
No.
And then the one game in Buffalo where Josh Allen, who he didn't have that great a game last on Tuesday night.
I didn't see it.
It wasn't good.
Did they win?
No.
Oh. Who'd
Buffalo?
They play?
No. Titans.
Oh, they lost to the Titans?
They got crushed 42-16.
Holy smokes. Yeah, I didn't follow that game at all.
Yeah, well, really, it's Tuesday night. You don't go into Tuesday thinking, oh, I need to watch football tonight.
No. But apparently that's something we need to start thinking about going forward, because it looks like we could be having a lot of games and all sorts of random nights just to make this season go.
It's going that way. And I'm guessing there's probably people out there complaining about how, and I would say there were probably Bills fans complaining that the Titans got how many days off between the last couple games.
Oh, you mean that tired freaking trope? Oh, they had a whole extra day of rest.
Except it was more like 2.5 weeks of rest, right?
I don't know.
We just have to get in a season this year.
Yeah.
Comments about fairness and things probably aren't going to work out great, but let's get the season in.
It's not going to be perfect. Nobody likes a whiner, especially 40 whiners.
Especially them. Got an email here from Jared in Kennewick, Washington.
Oh, are we just rolling right into the second half of the show?
Hey, we don't have a game preview this week, Adam, so why don't we just roll into some emails, and then after the emails, then we'll get to a break. We'll have more emails in the back half, too. I've got to fill out the front end of the show, though.
Oh, okay. Well, you just confused me. I'm a creature of habit, as you know. And
throwing an email in the first half of the show is unusual.
Yeah.
Stop whining about it.
You're right.
Roll with it. This is a different kind of season. It's a different kind of week.
You're right.
It's the bye week.
It's a different kind of podcast.
Jared and Kennewick comes in. Says, I love seeing the Seahawks improving to 5 wins and no losses to set a new franchise record. I love seeing them come from behind and snatch victory from the jaws of defeat, even when it happens in such a stressful manner as the Sunday night win over the Vikings. I've been thinking about that game a lot and have figured something out. It felt very familiar as it was happening, and despite all the tension, I believed Russell Wilson would be able to lead the team to a victory. At first glance, this might seem like it would come from the fact that he has led the team on so many game-winning fourth-quarter drives, or more specifically, because we have seen him beat the Vikings at home with great consistency. But the more I have thought about it, I have noticed another place where we see a similar sequence of events play out. I'm talking about the movies. We've been trained to see the hero of the movie show up late, or be just able to stop a villain as they put together their plan in the early stages of the movie. This lets us see just what the antagonist is capable of. Indiana Jones doesn't stop the Nazis from getting the Ark of the Covenant. The Avengers don't stop Thanos from collecting the Infinity Stones. And the Seahawks don't stop other teams from making plays. This sets up for the big finish, where the hero faces off against the villain with their full power, who has already been established as more than capable, and allows our hero to show their grit, determination, and prowess to come out on top. Seahawks football in 2020 is showing the rest of the league that they can stand up against another team, even when they are at their best. Seahawks football is the Rebel Fighters going up against a fully armed and operational Death Star. Seahawks football is Perseus arriving on the wings of a Pegasus as the Kraken comes smashing against the shoreline. Seahawks football is being outplayed for most of the game and winning regardless. I'm feeling very optimistic moving forward, because if teams can't bother to beat us, even when they outplay us. How can they? I can't wait to see more Seahawks wins and more 49er losses as the season continues. Love you guys. Keep up the good work. And go Hawks. From Jared.
Go Hawks, man. Hey, it's hard to argue with the fairy tale that has unfolded so far this year. And he's right about the 5-0 part. I mean, never really been done before. And that makes you kind of wonder, Brandon, as you look down the stretch here. So 5-0, that means they got 11 games left. Do you think they can eke out 6-5 over their last 11 games?
I mean, 7-4 gets you 12 wins. And gosh, even I thought that they would have at least one loss going into their bye week.
Yeah, I mean, that's just kind of statistically how it normally goes. But you kind of get a sense at this point that 11 wins this division, don't you think? 11, 12 wins?
We'll see what the Rams end up doing. I don't know if
they're going to implode. Mark it down right now. They're going to have like a 4-game losing streak at some point this season. It is happening. Mark it down.
It could be Bears, Dolphins, then their bye week, then they play Seahawks, Bucks. That could be the 4-game stretch for them that's the toughest.
I don't know when it's going to be. I mean, I know that the Seahawks will be involved in it, but that team is going to stumble going down the stretch. It is so fake.
They play San Francisco twice. They play the Cardinals twice, and they play us twice.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Right? And they're running out of cupcakes.
I don't know. Are the San Francisco 49ers looking like they are a team to beat for the Rams? I think they could roll over them both times
pretty
easily.
Division games are always tough.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I would favor the Rams in those matchups at this point, but I don't think they're a lick better than Cardinals, and I don't think the Cardinals are all that great.
I don't think the Cardinals are all that great. I do think that even despite the opponents, I do think that the Rams are looking like the second best team in the division. Because I was not expecting their offensive line to be good, and they're actually good, and they can run the football. And when you give Jared Goff time and a guy who can run the football well, mm-hmm. I think that's what he needs. And Malcolm Brown is doing a fine job. He was not even a guy who was on my radar going into the season as being a potentially good back for them.
Hey, man, you are not wrong that the offensive line and the running back and Jared Goff and their defensive line and everybody short of Jalen Ramsey's are hell of a good unit slash players against the dreck of the NFL. You're 100% correct. They are pretty damn good against garbage. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah.
They're not worth a crap when it comes to a real team. I mean, hell, you saw the Giants giving fits on offense there for a second. Look, the Redskins are absolute dumpster fire at this point. It wasn't for the fact that like their entire offensive line was Swiss cheese. I think that game's actually competitive.
That was a little bit troubling to see Alex Smith back there with knowing that Aaron Donald was on the other side of the line, just wrecking that offensive line.
Yeah. I want to talk about Alex Smith a little later on, too.
Okay. Yeah. Well, one more email and we'll get to the back half of the show. We got one here from the Bard, Adam.
Oh, early Bard appearance.
Well, we got through the bye week and we are 5-0. So what's not to like? Well, thanks to the medication, my heart rate has returned to something near normal. What was crazy, and what was awful to sit through, we made Captain Kirk look like a Hall of Famer in the first half, coupled with a no-name defense. I know we are banged up and are missing Adams, but we can't keep going like this. Does anyone feel like we are using up all our luck in the early part of the season, and it will come back to bite us on the bum? Or should we look at it another way and thank God for Russ and Metcalf and Lockett and, dare I say it, the O-line? There is, I guess, a case for saying
catfish it,
and we will score one more point than you, but it's not doing my blood pressure any good. Still, 5-0. Go Hawks. From the Bard. And he says, by the way, I got in at 12-1. They are now 6-1, so not bad. Cheers from John.
Yeah, got to be feeling good about that. It's the DNA of this team. They just, I don't care if it's a defensive game or an offensive, you know, game. They're only going to win by one score. It's just how it is. It's the way they're built. And it's how it will be forever. So whether this year it looks like the defense isn't going to stop anybody from doing anything the entire year or years past where it looked like the offense couldn't block, you know, your grandma, They're gonna win by one possession. That's it.
Well, Adam, what do you say we take a break? We'll come back. And I think we still do have some more to talk about with the Seahawks team on the defensive side of the ball. We'll get to that coming up next, along with welcoming some new members of the flock.
Sounds great, man.
Getting into the second half of the show. Adam, I don't know if we need to go back and address this or not, but I do think some people on the last episode had trouble interpreting the reverse jinx by DCH.
Yes, I sent some of that confusion, not quite understanding the shtick. And hey, look, I mean, if you haven't been around the DCH much, you would you'd be confused by such things. But
Just think he's like a really super negative guy.
Yeah, like a flaming dickhead is what you would think. But it turns out it's completely the opposite. And I'm glad you brought it up and can explain it for folks.
Yes, because, yeah, he is a really cool guy who loves the Seahawks. And it just turns out that he has an amazing talent when it comes to predicting the worst for the Seahawks and having it turn around and end up doing really good things for the Seahawks. Because and it's the reverse jinx. He says it and the opposite comes true. So like with this Vikings game, for example, go back and listen. He said Russell Wilson will have 2 touchdowns. And 2 interceptions in a loss. Mm-hmm. Well, he had 3 touchdowns and 1 interception in a win. So see, he correctly identified the number of passes to touchdowns combined into one. And it was the opposite of what was bad. The good thing happened. 3 touchdowns, 1 interception. They won the game.
Yeah. And I imagine their record will turn out to be quite the opposite of what he predicted too.
yeah. Like an 8-game losing streak.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing is you go back and listen. He said the Seahawks would score 27 points in a loss. Mm-hmm. They scored 27 points in a win last week. So, I mean, it's hard to argue with DCH's predictions when the opposite comes true, like every single time.
Yeah. I mean, basically, the DCH is like if you watch The Last Dance, Phil Jackson was talking to Dennis Rodman. And talking about there is a tradition in one of the Native American cultures that he had studied about the backwards walking person. But they had a lot of wisdom and all that stuff, but they just kind of go, they zig when everybody else zags, right? Mm-hmm. That's the DCH right there.
There you go.
Yeah.
And he imparts his wisdom upon us and we see it work out in our team's benefit. So
yeah.
Well, yeah, for those people that are frustrated by that, calm down. He's doing you a favor.
Absolutely, doing his job as his lane as a little flocker. That's what he does.
It was definitely a dividing line between people who are in the Ring of Honor Facebook group at gettingtheflock.com, the people who see DCH in the Ring of Honor and in the Discord group every single time on game day doing his reverse jinxing. And those people love the interview with DCH.
Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, really, at the end of the day, what it could come down to is it was an us problem for not explaining
explain it well enough. Yeah. I thought we did. I thought we explained it pretty well. I thought when we heard DCH comment that the team was going to go 4-8 and that not going to finish the season, we interpreted that as the Seahawks going to the Super Bowl. I thought that would do it for everybody, but maybe not for everybody.
Nope. Hey, look, sometimes you got to spell it out, you know?
Can I spell it out any more clearly that I don't want Dan Quinn taking over as the defensive coordinator midseason?
I don't think you should have to spell it out clearly, but apparently because he was a name and he used to be here and that sort of thing.
And he got fired. I understand feeling bad for the man at losing his job for the Falcons this past week.
Right. Exactly. But look, this is, I've heard a lot of people say this is a Ken Norton problem. I mean, look, I get the coaching, can win you games, right? But a lack of talent can absolutely lose you games in just having no premier pass rushers at all. And then losing Bruce Irvin on top of it. And then losing Jamal Adams, who was your premier pass rusher.
Are we going to get Michael Bennett and Cam Chancellor and Cliff Averill in their prime when Dan Quinn signs with the Seahawks?
Right. Cause that, I mean, heck, that would make a big difference.
That would make a really big difference.
Yeah, but it ain't happening. So I just don't know that the talent level is as it was. And just watching the way that Atlanta defense played defense, it was so predictable. I mean, it's fine that the defense has changed. It's fine that the scheme has changed in Seattle, because you couldn't play that Seattle cover three down in, down out anymore without that level of athlete backing it up. That was the difference.
And sure, he's not going to be focusing on the entire aspect of being a head coach. He would just be focusing on the defense. Okay. I don't know. I don't see Denver fans who, if the Jets fire Adam Gase, to where they would say, oh, let's bring back Adam Gase, because, man, that Denver offense was cooking when Adam Gase was our offensive coordinator.
Hey, I'm pretty sure that not even his own wife wants Adam Gase to come back on any given day. That dude is a freaking weirdo.
He's a weirdo.
And did you see they released Le'Veon Bell today?
They just let him go?
He gone. He's out there.
Wow.
If you want him.
Can he pass block?
I don't know. Once upon a time, he was a hell of a player. So I would imagine he can do some things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that that's a great fit here. I mean, maybe with Hyde down and that other guy that we drafted in the early.
Yeah. Rashad Penny.
Oh, yeah. That guy. I keep forgetting about him. Anyhow, maybe Lev Bell would be a nice addition. I don't know. Hey. But look, I watched that Jets. Who were they?
Cardinals.
Playing? Cardinals. That's Cardinals. What it was. Yeah. I watched a good portion of that. And boy, howdy. I don't know how many times I sat here and was like, what are they doing? Why is Frank Gore getting three times as many touches as Lev Bell? Like, how does that work? Just odd play calls and odd moments.
I don't think Le'Veon Bell wants to be in New York.
Nobody
does.
Well,
that would be weird, wouldn't it? Wasn't it Le'Veon Bell and Jamal Adams that were kind of feuding a little bit when Adams worked his way out of New York? Maybe there was a little jealousy on Le'Veon's part, huh?
Yeah. Hey, maybe they want to come back, or maybe he wants to come and, you know, reunite with Jamal and, you know, bury the hatchet and, you know, stick it to the Jets together, right?
Look, I'm not opposed to it.
If I'm Lev Bell, I want to get revenge against the Jets for sure. And possibly the Steelers, right? So I'd be looking around, okay, what good teams could I get on that play the Jets? And since the AFC East is playing a lot of NFC West teams this year, that only leaves one team in the NFC West that's any good. He couldn't go to the AFC East on one of the other teams because, I mean, I guess maybe the Bills are good, but maybe not, you know. I can't see him really wanting to go there.
I feel like the Bills are pretty stacked at running back, though.
Exactly.
I don't think they have the need for him.
Yeah. So, that to me, it kind of just leaves the Seahawks, and so that he can come and play here and have a huge game on December 13th and just, you know, maybe put the dagger in Adam Gase's coaching career there. With Jamal Adams. They need to team up for that.
Yeah, why not? I don't know. You could see him going to New England or Miami, couldn't you?
I could see him going to New England, yeah.
You know, Belichick's already put in the call.
I just waited, you know, till nobody else wanted Cam Newton and then brought him in, and he's still good. And then I just waited for the Jets to get rid of Lev Bell, and I'm going to bring him in. He's still good. So on to Cincinnati.
Bill Belichick playing chess when everybody's playing checkers, just waiting for good players to fall in his lap.
He's just patient. And then they've got the street cred that these guys, they want to go there, you know?
They want to go there. We have this exclusive group called The Flock that all Seahawks fans want to be a part of at gettingtheflock.com. And we have some new members to welcome to The Flock this week.
Hey, hey. All right. Who we got?
Lawrence Wallach is in at $5 a month. He came in annually for the year. So pledging his annual, what do you call that? His annual
membership? Allegiance?
Allegiance. That's what I like.
Okay.
That sounds right.
Okay.
So welcome to The Flock to Lawrence.
Yeah, welcome, man. Well, look forward to seeing you in the Discord chat.
Hamilton Anderson, going to be in the Discord chat too. Welcome to The Flock, $3 a month. Thank you, Hamilton.
Okay, so here's the biggest problem with the Discord thing for me is I don't know everybody's handles name.
Yeah, we have a group that's it's the roster channel. So everybody,
what the
if they,
is that?
I'm about to explain it to you.
Oh, okay.
So everybody that has a handle, if you go into the channel that's titled roster, because we have Seahawks game day, uh-huh. we have just a general channel. And so there's one for roster. And so if you have a name that you go by in Discord that is not your actual name, you can go in the roster channel and post who you are, where you're from, and then you can use that as a reference.
Do you literally have to go somewhere else just to see somebody's name? You can't just see their name?
It's within Discord.
I don't even know where the channels are.
Somehow you manage.
I don't know. I don't know. I downloaded it and somebody may
give you
a
tutorial. Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah. I just wish
you've managed to make posts in there. So you're doing something right.
Yeah. I have problems though. Like,
okay. And whenever you have a question, just text me and I will tell you who's who.
Okay.
Designed Pete's Beach House is Amy and Squim. John Ryan.
That actually makes a lot more sense now.
Yeah. I think she explained that she actually did design Pete's Beach House. Mm-hmm. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just ask me.
Yeah.
But for everybody else, know that roster channel is there as a reference.
Yeah. Otherwise, you're basically incognito. You can be anybody.
That's fine.
You can be Batman.
I think Batman joined.
Yeah.
Brandon David Barnett is in at $3 a month. So Brandon going to be getting in the Discord as well. Welcome to the flock to Brandon.
Nice. Can't have enough Brandons. Now, does he spell his name the correct way? Not like your goofy ass way?
He spells it D-O-N, which is the incorrect way.
I don't know. It seems to phonetically work out better.
Yeah. Kevin Russell came in at $12.12. He says, hi, guys. Love the podcast and the detailed and honest breakdown of each game of our beloved Hawks. Had to join as I realized I was getting dangerously close to my freeloading threshold. All the best from the UK, and of course, go Hawks.
Hey, go Hawks. So what I do love is that when he felt the heat of being a freeloader for too long, coming up against the two-year limit there, he went big. 12-12.
Not just the dip your toe in the water at three and then, you know, bump it up to five and then go 12-12. No, straight full-on Ring of Honor.
Right. Well, he knew what was up, you know?
Someone here I think I need to invite to the Ring of Honor because Stephen Kirkpatrick's come in with a few one-time donations. Yes. He comes in at $50. And so thanks to Stephen for that.
No, always thanks, Stephen. Appreciate that a ton, man. And yeah, that needs to happen. You know, get on that invite thing.
I need to make that happen. Stephen, if I don't get it to you, email me and mm-hmm. I will make it happen. Mm-hmm. Richard Joseph Gerald Rousseau is one of the ones who updated his pledge from 5 to 12-12 to get into the Ring of Honor. So thank you to Richard.
Yeah, man. Saw the value in that. I hope he's enjoying his time at the Ring of Honor here so far.
Yeah, we gave him his welcome post here recently. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm.
I see here. It's been a problem for me with the welcome posts because for those of you who don't know, who aren't in the Ring of Honor because you're not quite cool enough yet. Basically, but you can buy your coolness if you want to just, you know, buy your way in. But we do the welcome post, right? And one thing about the Ring of Honor group is they gif hard. They really do.
That is the tradition of the welcome post.
It is. And so everybody like throws in their gif and it's really cool. And I like that. And I've got one of two problems going on right now. One, the gif keyboard on my phone, like when I copy the gif and then go to paste it into the post, right?
Uh-huh.
It just doesn't it says it copies, but it doesn't copy. So like it just disappears, and so I don't get it. Second problem, so then I go to do it from the tablet, but if I'm at the cabin, the stupid HughesNet is so
catfish
slow that I can't, like if I type in like, hey, welcome, or whatever it is you're looking for, right?
Yeah.
That's like a 20-minute ordeal to get like three just to like populate in the little window to choose. And then there's no upload. Like, it's just not possible. So I have...
You do understand, though, that it's okay to just post, hey, welcome.
Yeah, well, it feels lame. And so I figure it's better, you know...
It's better to try and waste all of your time trying to find the one GIF in the top three from when you do the search. And then you have to go, oh, well, there's no good ones out of those three.
And then
or somebody
doesn't
already
upload
used
anyways.
It.
So I don't even do that anymore because I know the limitations.
So you're not getting, if you're joining the Ring of Honor, you're not getting a welcome from Adam because one, he thinks text posts are lame.
Not yet.
And two, his GIF game is just not strong.
No, my internet's not strong out there. That's what the problem is. But Fortunately, it looks like Friday the 23rd, maybe kind of, depending on who you believe, that'll all be fixed. So if you have not, if you've gotten your invite and you did not get a welcome gift from me, it is not personal. It's technology related.
Oh, you were putting way too much thought into it.
No, I feel bad, you know?
You don't have to feel bad. Just say, hey.
It's go big or go home,
you
do Brandon.
Not, it is not required for you to post a gift. That's all I'm saying.
It feels like it's required. Like, I feel like the rest of the flock would be like, what is this nonsense? Welcome? He's just typing things now?
Uh-huh.
He didn't want to put in the time to find a gift. He must not care. See, these are all the things that I know that the other little flockers would think.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks to our executive producers, Dustin Mock and Brian Shaw, and we're going to be thanking all of our members of the flock at $12 and above at the end of this show.
Yeah, you know, there's two people I don't have to explain myself to on the planet, and that's Dustin and Brian, so I really appreciate them.
They know. Yeah. They know. Going to be giving away another tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff. I know we are halfway through the month, but I didn't bring the card up and I just didn't do the selection for the last show while we were in the mountains. So
right. We
did the selection and who did I say won it? Joseph Van Tassel.
I was going to say Mr. Van Tassel. Yeah.
When we did the pre-show selection. So
congratulations. Is that the little bit of a future Hall of Famer, Amara Darbo and two others?
Yeah, that's the Russell Wilson, Tyler Lockett, and Amara Darbo. But for October,
yeah,
Flocktober,
mm-hmm.
We've got Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin, tiny pieces of Seahawks stuff in one card.
That was pretty solid.
It's Russell Wilson with a little bit of Wolf Gray and Doug Baldwin with the white.
Ah, the Wolf Gray. Love it. It's the best. It's the best uni we have.
And it looks like it's number 78 of 99. I'm having trouble seeing in the light. Something like that. 70-something.
That's pretty cool. Yeah, whoever gets that one, I mean, like I said, there's no weak link on that card.
No. Yeah. Tinypiecesofseahawksstuff.com, or you can go to getintheflock.com, look for the post, comment Go Hawks.
Do we have any Flocktober goals?
I don't know. We should probably be able to get to... What are we at? 301 members of the flock right now?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. It depends on how many died last week.
Right. So no deaths for the rest of the month is a goal.
Yeah. I like that.
And I don't know. 10% increase. Should we shoot for 330 members of the flock by the end of Flocktober?
I mean, I think if, you know, all the freeloaders out there that have just been, you know, consuming this for free and, you know, just not doing their part, like maybe start to feel a little guilty and decide, you know, maybe they could actually chip in and, you know, help carry the load a little bit. I think we should be able to get, you know, 30 more of you guys. I think we could do that.
It's not like an outrageous number, like trying to get to 400.
No, I mean, it's not like an outrageous number, like the thousands upon thousands who are actual freeloaders. That's an outrageous number. Not saying, just saying.
So go to getintheflock.com. You want to be part of the Flocktoberfest.
Yeah, I like it.
Looking at the Pick'em League, Tunbridge Hawk, our week 5 winner, got 12 correct. The only person to get 12. So congrats to Tunbridge Hawk.
Dude, that's impressive. I once again spotted everybody a game on Thursday night. You know, just because.
Yeah.
Getting really good at that.
Yeah, you got one more pick correct than I did. I only got 7. I had a terrible week.
Yeah. I think I'm up on you overall, aren't I?
Yeah, I think you might be a pick or two up on me.
Yeah, and I don't even pick a game a week.
Yeah, well, I pick the Thursday game wrong every week, so I mean, that's no excuse.
No, what was it? Yeah, I can't remember what the Thursday game was this last week, but I remember thinking to myself, doesn't much matter. I would have picked that one wrong anyway.
Yeah, it was the Bucks and the Bears.
Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah, exactly. So I was just like, oh, you know, 6-1 half does the other. It doesn't really matter. An L is an L.
Yeah. Well, we got a 7-way tie up at the top of the standings now. Collier Greens, Fernando Tejada, Monday Morning Quarterback, Paul Vogelsberger, Sideline Sockeye, Tuga Hawk, and Unlimited Hawkra.
Yeah, bunch of cheaters.
Yeah, they all got 9 and 10 points this past week. Yeah. But
well, they probably cheat by picking all the games to start with.
That's a good start.
Yeah.
Although none of us had to pick the Buffalo Titans game because it was not so sure that it was going to happen come on Thursday when they had to finalize the schedule. So
yeah, this could turn into a mess.
Yeah, you know what? If you're complaining about the Pick'em League, if you're complaining about football, just chill out, enjoy the season while we have it.
Yeah, yeah. Be thankful.
Do you think we'll get fans back in Seattle here coming up? Because they canceled all the games through October in Seattle, right?
I don't know.
But we haven't seen any transmissions due to football games that at least have been reported.
No, I have yet to see a story on it. I mean, it kind of gets to a point where you're like, okay, are you outside? Are you, you know, and they're spacing these people out, you know, these clusters of people, like what, 15, 20 feet from each other?
It seems like pretty good space. Like if you pay attention to that Dolphins game where they had, and we had Jason in Miami called in last week and talked about how spaced out everybody was. And we didn't play it on the show because we were up in the mountains. Yeah. But yeah, Jason in Miami was at the game and consumed a Seahawks game, said about 40% of the fans down there were Seattle fans.
That's cool. See, I think if you end up getting the vid in a situation like that, you're trying to. Like, that's the only explanation. Like, it just, right. Just be hard. Now, other thing about Jason, because it is my fault that I drug everybody up to the cabin where we couldn't play his call. So what I need from him is to record another call, and that is a stone-cold lock that we'll get him on, because I do feel bad for doing that to him. It's my fault.
Well, we did have a call as well from Jeremy in Seattle with some trivia, and see, that one was not a timely call, so yeah, let's hear from Jeremy.
Hey guys, this is Jeremy from Seattle. I'm just calling with a little bit of trivia. I bet that Brandon knows the answer to this question and Adam doesn't. The question is, during the Russell Wilson era, so since 2012, there's only one team that the Seahawks have not beaten. What is that team? I will tell you next week when I call in with the answer and another question. Goodbye, gentlemen. Go Hawks.
Go Hawks, Jeremy.
Yeah, go Hawks.
I am smart, you're dumb, so I'm bound to know the answer to this question.
Okay, so he's not wrong in assuming that most of that sort of stuff you're probably going to do better than me on. But I want to say it's Cleveland.
I'll start how I narrow it down, because you think Russell's beaten all the NFC teams because you play them regularly.
Yep.
I feel like we'd know if there was a team that we just really struggled against in the NFC. Mm-hmm. On the AFC side, you kind of go division by division, because some of these teams you probably only played two times in the last 8 years since Russell's been quarterback.
My guess would be Steelers or Cleveland.
Well, I know we had because there was the shootout game against the Steelers. Well, we beat the Steelers last year.
Oh,
in
God.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I was thinking then, of the last mollywhomping we got from them there.
Yeah. I don't think it's a North team. And I know it's not a West team, because you would think the Chiefs, but they had that one outstanding game against the Chiefs and beating Patrick Mahomes.
We've kicked the shit out of the Broncos, so it's not them.
Oh, you know what? I think I know who it is. I think it's the Chargers, because I was kind of leaning toward Tennessee because we had that one loss where they're over in Tennessee and got beat. But then I was just looking last night at the 2013 schedule, and I saw that we beat Tennessee in 2013. So that's where I was leaning initially. I think it's the Chargers because we hate Phillip Rivers.
Oh, okay. That could be true. Because, yeah, he has inexplicably, just totally lit us up every time we've played Phillip Rivers.
Yeah. And I know we've beaten the Patriots in the regular season and every other team in the East.
Yeah, I thought, so if it wasn't the North, I was going to guess somewhere from the South. Like, how many times have we played Jacksonville?
Yeah.
And a lot, we got beat by Bortles.
We did, but I think we beat Jacksonville when they came to Seattle.
Okay.
Yeah, and they played Jacksonville in that 2013 season too. Because in 2013, the only team that we lost against in the South was the Colts team.
Yeah.
And Andrew Luck, remember, because it was the one game where it looked like they may have recovered in the back of the end zone.
Yeah.
But then we won the Colts game where Cliff Averill ended up going out for his career. So that game stands out in my mind.
You know what does stand out to me is that Jeremy is doing an excellent job, like just carving out a segment of the show for himself.
There you go.
Like, yeah. Jeremy's like trivia guy now. And like, he's just like, oh no. And not only that, I'm going to call in next week with more trivia and then the answer.
There we go.
So yeah, I like it. That's ingenuitive right there. How do people call into the show, Brandon? What is the number? We haven't talked about it.
I'll see if I can remember the number because we do not put it out very often. It's usually in the show notes.
Yeah.
And a good place to reference to it there. 253-235-9041.
Yeah. There it is.
Yeah.
See, we stopped putting it out there because nobody would call. And then we stopped talking about it. Now suddenly people are starting to call. I love it.
Yeah. Two people in 1 week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we literally hadn't had a call, what, like 2 years?
Probably.
Yeah.
So you can call in. You can be a part of the mailbag. GoHawks@SeahawkersPodcast.com. You can leave a review like A Little Easy to Say did in the Apple Podcast store. Says the best in football. 5 stars. You guys are so funny. You made me laugh really hard when you brought up Tom Brady's deflated balls the other day. For anybody who might think about listening, you better listen to this podcast.
Hey, thanks, man. And no, we always appreciate those. We read them all. So yeah, hit us up with your opinion.
Hit us up. On to do better and better at life.
All right, Brandon. Well, my do better this week is for one of those
catfish
Rams. And I watched a fair amount of Rams, Washington football team. That's going to be hard every time.
Yeah, you already screwed it up once today, but that's fine.
Did I?
Yeah.
Oh, no. Yeah, that's going to be impossible.
You referred to them as the Skins earlier.
Did I? Dang it. All right. Yeah. Well, I'm one for one. But that is a better completion rate than I can say for Jared Goff, who sucks so freaking bad. This is how bad Jared Goff sucks. And it was hilarious. I noticed this far before I got put out on all the things, but he scores a rushing touchdown because he couldn't possibly complete one to the end zone because he sucks balls. And so he runs in to the end zone and goes to spike it and misses the entire freaking ground. He tries to hit the ground from 4 feet above and misses all of it. Whiffs.
I think the ball ended up in the stands, didn't it?
Something like that, man. He missed the entire earth. That's how much Jared Goff
catfishing
sucks. And that's how big of a mirage this 4-1 Rams start is. So to Jared Goff and the entire
catfish
Rams, do better.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments from that game.
The joke is, oh, couldn't hit a broadside of a barn and from 10 yards, right? Couldn't throw it in the ocean from the beach. Jared Goff can literally not hit the ground with the football when he tries.
My do better this week is for this movie that everybody's watching, Adam. The Social Dilemma.
Oh, I've downloaded this to watch at the cabin.
Yeah.
The girlfriend was like, nah, I don't really want to watch it, so I'm going to have to watch it on my own. And I was going to get to it in the next couple days, but now I'm worried.
Well, I don't think you have to be worried. In fact, I think knowing our discussions that you and I have had over the years is that you're probably not going to be surprised by anything in the movie.
Oh, okay.
And I went to watch it thinking that it was going to be a documentary, and it kind of is, but it also introduces this really weird drama aspect of it to it that I think is really unnecessary. But the problem I have the most with the movie is that at the end of the movie, the essentially the solution is just delete all of your social media and be done with it. Which, I mean, that's not a bad solution, but it's not the only solution because there are useful things about social media. We have our Facebook Ring of Honor group that's it's a cool group of cool people. And if that's all you use Facebook for and you get something out of that group, you don't have to delete your social media if you don't want to.
If it were not for the Flockers, I would no longer have a social media presence.
So the problem I had with the movie is that there were no solutions on how to just use social media as a tool to get what you want out of it without it using you. So I can go on Twitter. I can do a little bit of interacting during the game. I can set some time aside for when I want to do the tweeting and see what other people are posting, and then leave it and not, you know, waste an hour and a half just scrolling endlessly. And because, you know, the point of the movie is that these apps on your phone are designed to get you addicted to them, so you spend as much time as possible so they can put more ads in front of you. And that's the gist of the movie. So if you haven't seen it, spoiler alert, I guess.
Thanks. But you're right.
You knew this. That's the main takeaway. And so I thought that for a movie like that, that could have put some other perspectives of how to use social media intentionally. Because one of the things we talked about in our Facebook group, Ring of Honor, somebody brought up seeing the movie and how they were thinking about deleting social media. And there were a bunch of solutions of people saying, oh, have you tried this browser tool that, you know, it limits your time or it cuts out the ads, or there's like all these different things that you can fight back against to make it so it doesn't dominate your life if you are having a problem with it dominating your life. And I just thought that we had a more constructive discussion about it after the movie than there were solutions in the actual movie. So for The Social Dilemma, do better.
So what I'm getting from this is that yet again, one of the world's problems better solved by all the little flockers than, say, Hollywood in this instance.
Exactly.
And a lot of times it's, you know, versus anything in the world, it seems like the little flockers are the ones that seem to come up with all the bright ideas. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, because it's a bunch of normal people.
Yeah.
Who happen to be Seahawks fans.
Yeah. Maybe that's just like, it. Maybe all the sane, smart people turn out to be 12s.
Probably.
Well, speaking of sane and smart people, I'm not sure my better at life is one of those, but I am pretty excited for this individual. Apparently, everything that I'm going to talk about in this segment of the show is from the Rams Washington football team game. Bam! 2 for 1.
two for three.
Yeah, 2 for 3. Whatever it is. I don't know. Don't make no never mind the stats.
2 to 1. Yeah. However you want to count.
Yeah, that's what I was trying to get at. My better at life than Skip Bayless this week is for Alex Smith. We all know the story. Goes out there, gets his leg destroyed 2 years ago, you know, Joe Theismann style. And man, seeing him come back in that game was cool. I was honestly really, really, really hoping for the giant feel good Alex Smith redemption story where he comes out, just carves a heart out of the Rams. Unfortunately, they don't have any offensive linemen. And so why I say I'm not sure that he's either smart and or sane, Alex Smith, is he went into that game knowing that Aaron Donald was on the other side of the line and promptly got ridden like a donkey, like maybe his second drop back. Aaron Donald mounts him, you know, all 390 billion pounds of him. And hey, he held up. And I think after that, right, if you're Alex Smith, you got to be like, I am good to go. I got banged around and I'm okay. And for that, for making it back, I hope he becomes a starter for the Washington football team the rest of the way through. Even if he is a former dirty whiner, Alex Smith, better at life than Skip Bayless.
So do you think that's how that Rudy movie ends for him? Like if he never comes back in and plays another game, it's just him getting hammered by Aaron Donald and then getting up. And that's like, hooray.
I don't know.
He's okay.
It's enough of a win for me. I don't know how he's doing.
Yeah. I wonder how they work that into the movie in Hollywood. Yeah.
I don't know.
Or do they just rewrite it and have him actually beating the Rams?
I think that's the way you go, because there's no bigger feel good story in the nation than when the team that nobody cares about loses.
Exactly. My better at life this week, I don't know if I give it to this anonymous person or if I give it to Mookie Alexander, who put together the enemy reaction for the Vikings game. But there was a brilliant email that made it into that post-game reaction post by Mookie. And I just want to read it for everybody who may have missed it. It says, post-game email from an angry Vikings fan. Stab out my
catfish
damn eyeballs and feed them to a coastal bird. Every damn week I wake up to watch this team produce 55 minutes of good hope-giving football only to shart into their hand and smear it on the walls for the other five. I just want to watch a quarterback that doesn't crumble into ash the second the slightest thing asks him to color outside the lines. His mayonnaise energy has infected the entire team, which now can't go 60 minutes without pissing on the rug. Our defensive guru is washed, but it doesn't even matter because they can't field 11 NFL quality players. The right guard looked like a penguin taking his first steps before being crunched in half by a hungry sea lion. And despite all that, they still found a way to talk me into having a fleeting moment of hope just before tearing my heart out for the 980th time. I hate this
catfish
damn team. I hate playing the
catfish
damn Seahawks on
catfish
damn prime time. I hate losing to that eye blistering action
catfish
damn green from anonymous Vikings fan.
Oh yeah, he needed to put his name on it.
For leaving that comment, sending it into field goals. You, sir, better at life than Skip Bayless.
There's a few things I love about that email. One is mayonnaise personality. I love that phrase. And
mayonnaise energy.
Yeah, mayonnaise energy. And then the other being the comment on the action green. Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it.
Are you okay with the green-blue combo, though?
No. Forever no with the action green jersey.
I just thought maybe you didn't like the all fluorescent.
It's better.
Okay. So it is an improvement.
Yeah, I mean, it goes from, you know, a steaming pile of
catfish
to like a dry one, you know?
Yeah.
So there's that. But no, that's hilarious. That you bring that. You know, the other thing that we didn't talk about through the game recap, and I can't believe we didn't talk about it, was two things. One, Dalvin Cook's groin deciding to not play anymore.
Oh,
and yeah. And the fact that Russell Wilson can't have his own slogan. You got to let Cook.
Cook's his last name.
Yeah.
I did have a problem with that initially, and then the light bulb went off. It's like, oh yeah, his last name's Cook.
Wow, really? I just thought it was lame.
Yeah.
But like, you can't.
Well, first I thought, why is NBC stealing Russell Wilson's shtick and giving it to Dalvin? But then I realized, yeah, I guess
that shouldn't have taken even a second, man.
It took me way too long to figure that out. I'm not proud of it. That's why I saved it and didn't even talk about it. It just escaped my mind that Dalvin Cook had his groin injury. And and you know what? It probably benefited them because Madison just tore it up anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, look, we all have blind spots. If it takes you a while to figure out that two words are exactly the same when they're placed right next to each other in a sentence. I get it.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Well, you know what? I don't need your judgment when we have so many cool people from our flock supporting the show at $12 and above. So I'm going to run down this list of name, Adam. You just sit there in the corner and enjoy yourself. Kick back with a tea. Put your feet up on the desk. And I'm going to do all the work right here.
Keith Kettover, a.k.a. Floctimus Prime. University of Cybertron, Little Flockers, roll out.
DCH from Sparks, Nevada, the University of Montana Grizzlies.
Annalisa Mickelson, a.k.a. Mrs. Doug Baldwin, New York, New York, undergrad, University of North Carolina, Greensboro, graduate school, Brooklyn College.
Jameson Holman from Murray, Utah, representing Mississippi State University. Hail State and go Hawks.
Gary Blum from Chappaqua, New York, and the University of Pennsylvania, your 2016 Pick'em League champion.
Ron Pepper, UNLV Runnin' Rebels, San Francisco, California.
Hong Kong! Hawks! Hong Kong! Hawks! Hong Kong!
Hawks! Ella Esparza, Woodway, Texas, Yale University, and Sam Houston State, Eat 'em Up Cats.
Lisa in Seattle.
Kevin Stengem, Keene, Texas.
Vincent Parker. Emily Carr, University of Art Design, RN Collective.
Samuel Gelber, NoHo, California.
David Van Cleve, Camas, Washington, home of the Papermakers.
Leo Jose, Luleå, Sweden, from Luleå Eskimos and Vancomo in front.
Paul from San Diego.
Hey Seahawkers, my name is Garen Taylor. I live in one of the most beautiful places in the world, North Idaho. Hashtag on the roads. Go Hawks.
And continuing on down the list, we have Christina in Manassas, Virginia, Ross in Eureka, California, Young in Anchorage, Sven in Berlin, Deutschland, James in Linwood, Roe in Federal Way, Hector in Issaquah, Becca in Manhattan Beach, Tim in Austin, Kathy in Eureka, California, Joshua in Seven Oaks, England, Brandon in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, Christian in Bergen, Norway, Jonathan in Richfield, Thomas in the Bronx, Keegan in Colorado Springs, Owen in Ashburn, Ireland, Jeffrey in Kansas City, Kari in Rochester, Brian in Berlin, Connecticut, Jeremy in the Bronx, Eric in Seattle, Tracy in Kaneohe, Hawaii, Connie in Gothenburg, Sweden, Taylor in South Cleelum, Marvin in Riverdale, Utah, Dean in the Greater Hochtum, JC in Billericay, England, John in Norfolk, Nebraska, Eric in Clovis, California, Crystal in Oldsmar, Florida, Kevin in Sammamish, Chris in Spokane, Shannon in Florida, John in the Greater Hochtum, John in New York, Shoko in New York, Scott in Bakersfield, California, Bryson in Eltopia, Ivy in Renton, Greg in Seattle, Ben in Wrexham, Wales, Ryan in Chatham, Kent, Joshua in Candor, New York, Kenneth in Hutto, Texas, Mark in Bexley Heath, England, Mario in Seattle, Seth in Tacoma, Jeremy in Moses Lake, Cora in Ditters, Deutschland, Anders in Vila, Denmark, John in Honolulu, Warren in Dundee, Oregon, Marlin in the Greater Hochtum, Chris in Austin, Jose in Chicago, Amy in Squim, Marcus in Potts Point, New South Wales, Joseph in Vancouver, Richard in Killeen, Texas, Preston in Phoenix, Nathan in Bozeman, Corey in Vancouver, Taylor in Spokane, Jesse in Sultan, Jay in Bellingham, Kyle in the Greater Hochtum, Ryan in Salt Lake City, Darren in Stafford, Virginia, JC in University Place, DJ in Menifee, California, Tyler in Kalama, Kevin in Great Glen, Leicestershire, Ozzy in Woodstock, Georgia, Daniel in Post Falls, Idaho, Christina in Auburn, Pepper in Greenville, South Carolina, and Jake in Tukwila. A big thanks, as always, to all of our members of the flock, and a big thanks to our $12 and above subscribers each month. Always enjoy running down that list and thanking each and every one of you.
Oh, man, it's awesome to just feel the badassery of that group, like, flow over me. Hearing their names and all that, and how many of them they are together as one. They're awesome, man.
And with that,
there's only one thing left to say.
Go Hawks.
Go Hawks. Cook and cook are the same word.